Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a long time, right, since I got my face recorded. Apologize for that delay. I will have at least one more episode that has the graphics because I recorded it about a month ago, and I just don't have any video for it. I want to mention that we have officially crossed over the 8-year anniversary of this show. Because in 2015, in I think late part of June, I started this experiment called Deep Thoughts Radio. And before we get into today's episode, I just want to give anybody who's new to the show just a little peep into how this whole thing started. It'd be really quick. Had a radio show on KXRZ in Los Angeles, which is a super, super mega heavy metal channel. I don't even know if it still exists. My buddy's girlfriend owned half the station, and they were looking for different programming at night. And so they came to us, you know, and I'm like, man, I'm deep into conspiracies. I'm still not feeling comfortable because the world isn't awake, you know. It's about 2014. So I don't want to have my name out there. You know, I'm contributing stuff, but on a very anonymous level. And of course, today I don't give a shit. I think I'm the last of their targets at this point. Minus maybe the moon missions. My buddy talked me into it. We did 126 episodes. And then I bought a video camera because I thought, wouldn't it be great? We just make 100 a season, which is what I've been doing on this show, except for season 6, which is waiting for a season 7 thing to happen. My co-host Kyle, which I'll show a picture of him playing the guitar. He's a badass rock and roller. I mean, he's a punk, kind of an... I don't know, it's like metal, punk, Dr. No, lead singer. He doesn't want to be on camera. And I'm sitting there going, we both look good. Like, there shouldn't be any problem. And he said he didn't want to be on camera because we're like taking leaks during the show. I'm editing out all the things. But sometimes he'd get up to take a leak in the backyard and then I'd continue the show. And then if I had to go, he'd take over the show. So I think he just wanted that freedom. And so we never recorded video. Actually, there's a little video I actually have of us recording. It's pretty damn funny, too. It's in color, and it's on the Patreon account.
Well, you know what I heard? CERN has finally made a discovery that will take us one giant leap towards antimatter.
Oh, okay.
They found two parties.
Antimatter and Uncle Tom get together. And,
right. Yeah. They found two things that could not coexist, and one was an Apple Watch and a pair of men's testicles. Slammed them together. Yeah. They simply could not coexist.
There you go.
But anyway, I take this camera, and I'm like, well, you know what? I got subjects I want to get deep into. You can only go so deep with a co-host. Kyle was very aware of this. And I used to do these like solo shows. When Kyle couldn't record, we'd do like 2 shows a week, and I'd do like one by myself. I'm just talking, right? Similar topics for Deep Thoughts. Anyway, I pump out an episode with the raw microphone from the camera. I got no shirt on, so I look ridiculous. And I gave it to a friend who was a big fan of the show in Scotland. And his channel is like GED, Jed. He's got his own channel. He does all this wild stuff. He goes all over Scotland. If it weren't for that dude coming back and saying, you should do evolution now. I was like, okay, let me re-record the first episode. I'm thinking to myself, let's get the microphone set up. I finally brought this thing out and just mirrored it so you guys get good audio. And boom, we're off to the races, right? It's probably not until like episode 26 that the episodes really start picking up. And then by the 50s of the first season, which you can get all on Rumble and BitChute and the website, deepthoughtsradio.com, I really started getting to my stride and moving the camera around a little bit. So the reason why shit still marked season 6 is that what ended up happening is 100 episodes is where I drew the line for a season. I created a new intro, new graphic for the, you know, for all the videos. I created one graphic and I just put text on it, which isn't that interesting, which is why all the new ones have an image, right, to draw in. Well, I would be done with 100 around April, May. And I wasn't ready to really kick it off. So I create bonus episodes after that until I got the new intro worked out. Nothing really changed with the show, right? And so I spent a lot of time on season 6 intro, as you can tell. And then I just redid it. So you guys are seeing the new one with a lot more assets, and it's been completely recreated since the first one you ever saw. And it's all beautiful 4K. It's beautiful. The first one was 4K too. But anyway, I have a full concept for 7. I've been working on it. When it comes in, it will be season 7. But we have technically done 2 seasons, what, almost 3 seasons now, of like 2 bonus seasons. It's just ridiculous. So I apologize. You guys don't give a crap, right? So if you see like little sketchy, you know, season indicators, you're like, what the hell is this? Still 6? What's the deal? You know, why is this 5? Why is this 4? That's the technical reason. I've just been overwhelmed. So I tried to do some research. I'm just going to tell you, this is where I have integrity, okay, for you guys. I've been wanting to do an episode on all those time travel photographs that you keep seeing online, right? It's made out of some asinine stuff. I mean, there is a couple time traveling people that are interesting. They have really nothing to do with photographs, even though it might have a photo of them. It's not the proof. But all that stuff is so shitty. Let me just say it. It's just so bad. Any people holding, you know, their hands up to their head, you have no idea why they're doing that. And there's no object in their hand half the time. Then they lie about, like, there was a man put in a spacesuit in a cathedral. And they'll just skip over the fact that, oh, it was added recently. It was added recently. That's why it's there. It's not some 13th century to 15th century carving in the side of a cathedral. It was added recently. But they'll just skip over to create some clickbait bullshit, right? I just can't do that to you guys. And all these, you know, it was like, what, some guy from the press went back in time and watched the Gettysburg Address. And they take a picture of this blurry-ass kid at the Gettysburg Address. That's the guy. There's no part of him that's identifiable. I mean, he's just fur, you know. It's just an old camera. And the time-traveling hipster? You know, it's just all crap. And the time-traveling surfer? It's just a broke kid who probably swam that day when everyone else is in their suits and dresses. They didn't swim that day. That kid swam. His hair's all fucked up, and he's got like a T-shirt on and some shorts. Shorts look definitely period. Everyone's looking at him because they're like, why is this guy in the shot? He's not even dressed up. And we dress up everywhere we go. Well, the kid was probably a local. You know, whatever. Just none of it's any good. Then they try to lean on the teeter guy, which I did a whole episode on. But all these videos I watched today and the previous experiences going back, you know, doppelgangers happen because genes repeat themselves, right? Don't you look like one of your relatives? Can't you pick out one of the people in your family? She looks just like grandma. Oh, you know, I got pictures from the 1800s of my family where there's men that look like one of my cousins. Just identical. Why do I look like Johann Brahms? Go look up Johann Brahms, the musician. Find the earliest, youngest, non-chubby photograph of him where he's got his arms crossed. That's exactly what I look like in my 20s. So much so my family's like, holy shit. And he's exactly from the same place we're from, Hamburg, Germany, and High Germany. So anyway, I can't make it up that there's any interest in that, so I'm not going to do that. But what I am going to do is talk about something that's just sort of in conversation right now, as you can tell from the title, but you don't have necessarily someone sitting with you having the conversation with what amounts to 25 years of video game experience, plus all the years around that, constituting more experience. My background in video games goes something like this. I saw the movie Tron in 1982. At that point, I was sold. Computers are where I'm going to spend my energy. I'm also going to follow this guy, Sid Mead. And by the first time I got a computer, somewhere in the early 80s, plus the high school computers, plus the college computers, I was making video games. Two-player drag race games, right? So you got a drag car on the top of the screen, drag one on the bottom, soundtrack, two, you know, your left keys and the right keys are for the two different players, and you race until you hit it. Drew all the assets, animated everything, and this is like 1985. So I was heavy. I could have sold that game. I just didn't have a father that understood that you could sell those things, right? You could put an ad in the back of a magazine and sell discs, right? I did haunted house games. I took the drag race game and made it, when I had to move to Pascal for school, I made it into a horse race game. Same engine. So by the time I get to California, I get on the TurboTax team, which was actually called MacAtax back in the day. Do a couple of years there. And then I get laid off because they have to lay us off for the summertime. Lost a bunch of money. I go off and draw video games right away for Activision subsidiary called Atomic Entertainment, which then was renamed Shockwave Entertainment because they were afraid of offending the Japanese. And then go back into the tax world, then go up to the Bay Area. By 1993, I'm contracting with Electronic Arts to do anything and everything that I do that they need, from soundtracks, sound effects, QA, writing databases for QA, testing, and which is everything. I mean, like if you knew something about physics, you would sit on the engine for physics evaluations. You know what I mean? It was everything. Then by the time the 21st century rolls around, I start my own game company. We run it for 8 years. But the whole time I'm working on, you know, Ultima Online in 1994. I'm running the Delta release of that game. So I've been in and around Electronic Arts when it was a good company, when it was the number one company in the world. I was with them until they hit $3 billion annual revenue. But I'm also studying the game engines. I'm studying the level editors. I'm designing games. Like, a lot of my friends were just polished guys. They're amazing. I mean, you can't get a game to be perfect without these polisher dudes. But I was the Inception kind of guy. Oh, I also made a video game called Mutant Warriors and sold it to Virgin Mastertronics back in 1989, 90, probably early 90. They never released it, as far as I know. But it was a badass game. You were this Marine. It was split into two sections. The whole basis for the game Quake was our storyline. And then a bunch of the mechanics we had, which were only maybe exhibited in Zelda up to that point, which I never played Zelda, so I didn't know this was happening. But a lot of our top-down engine work and storytelling and interaction with objects became Fallout. So I've been around the block. I now am studying both Unreal 5 and the latest 2022 build of Unity 3D. I programmed tons of parlor games, poker games, Big Pussy Poker for HBO. I didn't cut the first code, but I was hired to tune up and fix a bunch of bugs around 2004. And one of my additional paychecks was I got a complimentary DVD box of Carnival, probably one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life, the show on HBO. If you haven't seen it and you dig sort of real world magic in the Dust Bowl era, man, are you in for a ride. It's only two seasons, but I've seen it six times and I still uncover new things, and I'm a fucking professional screenwriter. It's crazy. Sorry, I've got something stuck on my stick. Weird. It's like an area made of coal. So I thought we would talk about this evolution of video games getting to photorealism, because I'm seeing people like Elon Musk walking out of nowhere, probably having, you know, a good incidental amount of knowledge about the subject. But it's like, it's funny, this fucking worship of this Satanistic guy. And if you think he's not a Satanist, go look at his fucking picture and his profile on Twitter and tell me what you see, because it's his costume of Satan. Born a billionaire, pretends to be poor, and pretends to be self-made. He's not an idiot by any stretch of the imagination, of course. But let's just say that a bunch of the world experts have been saying, or even just shit, you, have been saying something for, I don't know, 20 fucking years, and no one's listening to you because you don't have a big audience. And then he repeats the same shit that you've said, and suddenly he's the inventor of the fucking subject matter. It's like, oh my God. He said something in fairly concise language. He said, look, as long as you subscribe to any level of improvement in computers and software, then very shortly here, we're going to be at a level of photorealism in video games that will be indistinguishable with reality. Now, this year, a trailer came out for a video game that I don't believe is released yet, but it's going to be called Unrecorded. Unrecorded. This is daylight, warehouse, guy running around with a gun, shooting what you hope are bad guys, part of some storyline. And even having a CG background, an effects background, I mean, just, I've been around this shit at the deepest levels for 30 years. This is, I only knew it was a video game because I read the description on the trailer. this is so realistic, right? Now, eventually, you can your eye starts getting educated to a few little things here and there, and they cover up the faces with the shrouding to hide the greatest weakness of any 3D engine. But if you go off and look at kind of the facial features that are going on in Unreal in games that are released and games that are coming up, it's now at a level of utter realism. I mean, really astonishing. You not only have a perfect human face with the eyes that look real finally, but they're also creating all the underlining bones, subdermal tissues, muscles, so that when it does flex above, it is real. And that may be more Hollywood side of the game, but I've seen some demos in Unreal to suggest that they're at least mocking that underneath the face, right? Now, Unity 3D is the second tier down from Unreal 5.2, which is the current release of it as I record this episode. We'll be in 5 for a long time, but it will definitely be significant upgrades. But I don't know if you know, but Weta Studios, created by Peter Jackson for all his movies, all the Tolkien stuff, right? Cameron helped form Digital Domain, as I understand it, and of course, he worked with ILM. He worked with Weta for the avatars. Now he's just Weta all the way, right? Weta for Avatar 2 patented tons of new technology, tons of new physics for water effects and all kinds of stuff. So they have sort of this death grip on some of the best simulation technology out there. Now, again, for cinematics, it's one thing. And for games, it's a different thing. We don't have all this floating point mathematics we can do where a frame might take 18 hours to render or even 2 hours to render or an hour to render. It's rendering 60, 70, 100, 120 frames per second in your computer. It has to, otherwise you get sick. Well, Weta and Unity 3D have signed an agreement that if possible, their custom technology is going to become a part of the Unity 3D engine. So even though Unreal is several orders of magnitude more powerful and more realistic than Unreal, I mean than Unity, excuse me. It's going to be hard getting these two U-name companies straight. Unreal's number one, Unity 3D's number two. Now, this isn't necessarily going to be about those two engines or anything, but I'm just kind of setting the foundation of where I think things are going, okay? It takes a tremendous amount of ingenuity to get this stuff to work inside your computer, okay? And most of you know this, and a lot of you will be able to have a very intelligent conversation, probably most of you males for sure, about what's making a game look real and how you build a computer and what's important in your computer to make a game look quick. You know, GPUs, GPUs, GPUs. Now, it should be noted that the chip companies like Intel are starting to realize, hey, you make shitty chips, you know that? I mean, they're better than your previous shitty chip, but you make shitty chips. Look at what's happening at NVIDIA. They're eating your lunch every day. AMD is eating your lunch, but AMD also makes CPUs, right? But NVIDIA is where you get probably the penetration of military-level ARM chip design into the private sector for processing mathematical data, big machine learning, polygon information. It is just a powerhouse that sits inside of a card. It used to be that a card for a video card, you would buy it, pull it out of the package, take it out of the wrapper, and plug it into a slot in your computer. I just got a PC with a 4090 NVIDIA card. I didn't know that cards had gotten so humongous, okay? It takes two ports, I believe. It's so massive inside the CPU. It's a permanent structure inside your CPU. Yes, you can undo all the screws and yank it out and put another one in or maybe put another one beside it. But these are monster cards. It ain't your daddy's old car anymore, right? But there are tricks to the trade. And it's still the same tricks that are going on. Now, they're trying to fight it from two different ends. They're trying to provide hardware that can do these calculations, more calculations per second, right? And then they're trying to write the software such that, and there's a bunch of strategy to both sides, okay? But they're trying to write the software to have to do the least amount of calculations to get the same effect inside your game per frame, right? I'll give you an example that I ended up learning about the 1993 game by id Software called Doom. John Carmack, probably in the top three game coders in the world. He's probably been number one several times. I just don't know what's going on at GT Interactive to give him that number one anymore. But John is a one-man shop. That dude does everything that a team of like 50 guys would do. Plus, he's just a genius. He was dealing with computers that didn't have video cards, you know, beyond just moving signal out to a monitor. It wasn't doing any GPU handling of any significant proportion, right? And yet he was getting kind of faux 3D inside the Doom franchise. Took him a few years to get into the Quake franchise, where he was actually making real 3D worlds. And then we saw a degradation in the graphics because even though it was less stunning to look at in some cases, it was actually mathematically real 3D on the screen as opposed to this sort of magic 3D he created for Doom. He ran into an issue, and I got this out of a book that talked all about his engine, probably in the late 90s. And it said that he didn't have, you know, the ability to do sine cosine algorithms live because the computers, you know, remember the old calculators back in the day, those old Texas Instruments calculators? One of the things that was always fascinating as a child is you pick up the calculator and you do anything and you push the sine or cosine button, and that little bastard would just be like, boink, and it would give you a number, right? Not quite that sound effect, but almost. Well, computers got a lot better, probably several thousand times faster by 1993. But what John did was a genius move. He said, look, there is a range of sine and cosine numbers that I need to push through an algorithm. What he did was he goes, look, what I'm going to do is pre-calculate all of those results and store it in a table in memory. So as you're watching the progress bar go across the bottom in 1993, which you don't realize, and I didn't realize until I read this book, he's pre-calculating. He's not only loading stuff, but he's pre-calculating a bunch of math and memory. And then he could just stitch together a little character reference like A5, and it gave him that number. Boom. He can all of a sudden create faux 3D that actually is relying on a sine cosine mathematics to get something done, a matrix to be processed so it can move something. Now, a matrix, just so we can understand this, is like X, Y, Z. So, you know, down the screen, across the screen, and then at some depth, plus like usually a world coordinate as well, a W. The way that 3D algorithms work is you take these numbers and you push them through these functions and they change those four numbers. And then you can go back to the screen and say, this is where it moved. And then you twist, turn, rotate, move, and you push that through and you take the numbers from that and you push it through. You just keep continually processing a matrix and it flies around the world for every point in your model, right? We won't get that technical after this. Well, the other thing was, is that you know that they tell you that computers run on binary. Zeros and ones, zeros and ones. That's the whole thing. That's what the chip is listening to, is zeros and ones. Well, could, you know, human beings don't think in zeros and ones. Plus, it takes a lot of zeros and ones to do anything. So they created this language. It's typically called assembly that rides on top of that, which starts to use bigger English acronyms to abbreviate commands, and you're pushing stuff in memory and pulling stuff out of memory and adding numbers together. It's a very brutal method of coding. And then that was too difficult, so they started creating languages on top of that. So binary was a generation one language, and then there was generation two language, then a gen three language, right? C++ is a gen three language, right? They used to call them 3GLs, 2GLs, and 1GLs, right? No one ever says 1GL. But they'll bring the big badass hardware in and say, look, those chips right there are the fastest chips in the world at this price point. The programmers come in and go, okay, give us the design of your chip. Okay, now we're going to write an assembly language that connects to the chip. And we'll write in this assembly that fits your chip. And then we will take, instead of writing it in something that has to be interpreted down a step, which takes time, nanoseconds, right? But it takes time. And all that time adds up when you're multiplying it times millions of calculations, right? If not billions and billions of calculations. So it's this marriage of the two that actually make it work. And there's actually, if you watch Computer Chronicles from the 80s, they talk about this at length, something you don't get in college, something you don't get out of a book usually. They were having to design languages that have a paradigm which will arrange your commands into the computer to match the way that the chip is expecting to get your call. So it's got it all laid out for you, right? You know, when you have to build, say, 100 of something, right? You've helped a friend, you know, assembly line something for a banquet or a party. You're building decorations or whatever. If you build everything one at a time, it takes forever. But if you line everything up like Ford and you go, put the wheels on the frame, put the body on the frame, put the engine inside. Now let's put the upholstery in. That industrializes it, makes it super fast, and you could almost do it without thinking. And the quality is usually the best of the best. Whatever your template is, you get that final result every time. So the first, just to finish up this section, the first wave of this, when the military started getting into flight simulators in the 80s, okay? 83, man. They had chips that were built one way, and the programmers would just inherit that chip. And so they were writing software to finagle their commands to get into the chip right, and then when the chip would barf it out, they'd have to finagle it back into their paradigm. All that took so much time, they realized, Jesus, we need to design new chips that literally are meant for this purpose. Hence the GPU eventually 20 years down the line. Where are we today? We talked about the Unrecord engine, Unrecord game, I should say, running in the Unreal Engine. There's Unreal, there's Unity 3D. There are other engines out there, the Crytek engine. I don't even know if it's still being used. I don't think anyone's going to put any money in a custom engine at this point, but it does happen, especially for consoles. To digress into consoles for one split second, a console, meaning a PS5 and below, the 360 series, they have an economy of memory, hard disk space, video output, signal processing for sound, GPU. And you have to build your game to engage that economy. And so let's say you want to use the Unreal Engine in a PS5 game. So imagine installing that engine. You haven't even built a game yet. You have no levels. You have no sound, no character animations, nothing. Just to put that engine in there, it's eating up memory, storage. It's occupying your processor a certain amount. It's occupying your GPU a certain amount before you put your stuff in. So out of a dollar of an economy, 100%, you might spend 25 cents just putting the engine inside the system. When we created the James Bond game for the PS2 in about 2000, which was a total bomb. The reason why it was a bomb was an executive decision to not release the PC game, which was bitching. You would have loved the PC game. But to get it on this platform that only has 64 megs of RAM. When you installed the engine that we needed to use at the time, which I can't remember what that was, it took 55 megs of RAM. So we have less than 9 meg left to load a level, your character, animations. It was horrible. So the game looked like shit. The color palette was reduced down to just the bare amount of colors we could put in the game just to make it look decent, which it didn't even end up looking decent, right? This is what happens when you start a game company, you let a marketing department determine what you should make. That's like violating Steve Jobs, you know, law of, hey, I'm not asking the public what they want. I'm making stuff I love and I know they'll love it too. And he was totally right. So we've got a few things going on at this junction. We have, obviously, looking at television screens, computer screens, however you want to call it, monitors. We have amazing output coming from really badass PCs that might cost you $4,000 and up. All right, well, your consoles are never going to cost $4,000, so they're never going to hold a candle to your PC. Your best virtual experience in the world is out of a PC. Not a Mac, but a PC, okay? There's a huge hit going on the Mac side. Blizzard, you know, didn't release, was it Diablo for the Mac, but everyone bought it. I just said that the other day to you guys. Yeah, so Mac is in a bad position. They just don't have any liaison that understands what's going on. They're so into virtue signaling, they've just lost track of why people own computers. It's crazy. Really unfortunate. Because their hardware looks really great. But you got to build relationships to get your products to sell. But the other thing that's coming up is this virtual reality thing. Now, again, it's gone up, it's gone down, it's gone up, it's gone down. Nobody wants to wear any bullshit on their head. I think that's still the case, and I think that the Vision Pro is going to have a huge problem with it. Not to mention the $3,500 price tag on the damn thing, right? But eventually, they will get something to happen. That's the thing. They're going to get the form factor down, and what will end up driving someone messing up their hair and potentially passing hair lice between two people. And we've actually had a documented case of eye herpes traveling between headsets. Pink eye would travel on a headset. You're going to really want to own your own headset. Just take it everywhere you go, and hopefully it's compatible with where your destination is, right? Good luck there. It'll be the offering inside the headset which is going to draw in the public. There will be some experience that will be unlivable without having it for children, right? Mommy, daddy, I gotta have this thing. By the way, I didn't cut my hair off. I cut 10 inches off, but still long. I just skipped a pullback today. Just in case you, dude, did you cut your hair? A little bit. It's what I do every 2 years. So what'll end up happening with these headsets once the kids get the offering and they start living through an object, living through a paradigm, living through a mechanism? It's a very big lesson I've learned in anyone doing software solutions. If you don't live through a piece of software, that software has nothing to do with your life. You'll buy it, it'll stay on your hard drive, and that'll be it. If you buy a piece of hardware, some utensil, utility for your house, and you don't live through it, a coffee machine that has never made coffee for you because you don't drink coffee, or alarm clock that's a pain in the ass to set up, you'll just never use it, right? So whatever solution's coming up is going to be huge. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be like you can't live without it. I don't know if they have that trick up their sleeve. They need to have that up their sleeve because Apple's been keeping this Apple Watch going, and I'm sure at a giant loss for a really long time. I think they've been losing money on that thing because you got a bunch of people who bought them, and some of them live through it, but a bunch of them just wear it to basically say, look what I have, right? And they never look at it. They never use any of the features. But there's a whole bunch of new tech that people aren't really putting together here. And that is, you can feel it, and you're having individual discussions about the technologies, but maybe not an integrated discussion about the technologies. So I want to get you hip to this so you can start having integrated conversations about where this might go. And your brain needs to start pushing these two zones together, or these several zones together, I should say. Shouldn't have said two. You have GPUs that are now in your access range to purchase and bring into your house that can start creating photoreal video games. Eventually, they will become movies, right? Movies won't necessarily always be this finished product that you buy from a studio and you watch. They're going to be using the same tech to create virtual actors, AI voices, AI characters. Probably about 5 to 10 years out from seeing anything decent in that realm. But there will be that Toy Story breakthrough moment when a whole movie is made of CG. I mean, that was wow. And it was entertaining and it was over the top. I mean, imagine saying, I'm going to make a 100% CG movie. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever. But Pixar did it and brought in a great story of Toy Story. Of course, we know the problem with, Woody and Route 66. But anyway, some of you will get that. But things are going to change in the next 20 years. Computer games. Well, how does that really work? Someone creates a story. They have to put game mechanics in it. It's got to be engaging. It has to have a reward system. It has to have suspense, typically. You have to be able to access it with your limited or advanced intelligence. And since the intelligence quotas are going down in the world, the games are getting more absurdly stupid. I think we're below the IQ of an average Pac-Man game at this point, where kids couldn't even understand it today if they tried to play it, right? But they'll play these drawn-out games with nothing but cutscenes, or really crappy mechanics, because they're just really, it's an eye spectacle game, right? There are still some great games out there. We're looking for Bethesda to drop the next Fallout 5, right? We have big machine learning. Big machine learning has been proven to be a giant factor in the next upcoming games. how does that integrate with games? Before we go into AI, and there's a bit of, you know, you can say everything's AI because the computer is actually thinking and making calculations, but big machine learning is really, it is a system of creating so many, let's see, number sets going into something with an algorithm, like your accounting to balance your checkbook, that if you gave it 20 years of your checkbook and then you said, okay, now you've got all my correct entries for 20 years. Now I got to partially fill that checkbook. What are the rest of the numbers for today? It will guess incredibly accurately what those numbers will become. And you'll live your life randomly and you're like, holy shit, this thing was right down to the penny, right? It's not quite that insane, but it's going to be there really, really soon. The more it knows about you, the more it's going to get those numbers right. So what they've done is they've taken footage of driving in Los Angeles, for instance. This is a real deal. So just footage out of a front end of a car. Cars going by, people walking by, you know, mountainscapes, that kind of stuff. And they put it into a big library. Then they took Grand Theft Auto from several versions back, driving down streets in Los Angeles. Now it's very low poly, low polygons, less detail. The colors aren't very realistic. Grass is just a green patch over to the right, like bright green. And then they told big machine learning, okay, I want you to stop every frame. And I want you to overlay on top of this bad GTA what you think those assets really are and how they really look in the real world using all this referential footage from Los Angeles. The real experiment was driving in Germany, to be honest. They brought German driving footage over to GTA, but it was phenomenal. Okay. The demo I saw was turning all the GTA footage into, this is live playing, okay, into almost virtual, well, I'd say almost reality, I would say. Cars had license plates. Cars had dents and oxidized paint on one car and really shiny other car. A person walking down the street, which is low poly, almost like skating characters now walking full steps connecting to the ground. The grass is all of a sudden real grass. And it's aged in various pockets, like it didn't get watered properly or got mowed too short. Mountains were a bit of a challenge because where they took this footage of Germany, I didn't have a lot of mountains in that particular location. So I was struggling to figure out what mountains look like. Or it would make mountains have a lot of green on them because Germany has a lot of mountains with foliage on it. And ours are more desert. It eventually figured it out. But for the first few frames, you'd see like trees and grass and bushes on the mountain. All of a sudden we go, well, those aren't there, and it would pull them out. But the kicker was, at the end of this demo, the dude said, look, this is on a computer of a normal caliber GPU running real time. So all of this is happening real time out of a big machine learning engine. Your jaw hits the ground. You're like, oh my God. Advance that 5 years, especially with the 4090 or some industrial strength P-level NVIDIA card, which is like what the professional studios use. Those chips are coming your way. So they happen in like Weta, ILM, Digital Domain, Zoic, and it will come to you in a much more affordable package, still improved from their version, but affordable. So an $8,000 video card will suddenly cost $3,500. Still a shit ton of money. But if you got the money, you're having these premium experiences. I don't know if I'm going to be able to cut in the actual animated version of these videos. So if you see stills, it's because the footage is copyrighted and it'll just kick it out of YouTube at least, right? But you'll see it. Then you have artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence has its initial use, just like any technology, right? It gets used for like ridiculous stuff. Make sure my toast doesn't burn, you know? And then it gets up to the point now where you see ChatGPT, the GPT engine with the chat interface that's restricted to November 2021 knowledge base, and it will teach you anything that it knew at that point. I mean, it's phenomenal. It doesn't cross-pollinate personal experiences, so if you told it something in your session, it doesn't get into my session and vice versa, so it keeps us quarantined from each other. You can't afford to have that happen because there could be private information, high security information. You don't want to bleed over to other people's sessions, okay? But what we haven't really thought of outside of current gaming, which is AI has typically been used to figure out how an enemy might run after you, how a ship might come at you. A missile launches with various intelligence to it, heat sinking, DNA sinking, whatever. And it's just algorithmically used, you know, generating the trigonometry and coming at you, right? There's AI in all the engines for like jumping and crawling up things, and it's just all automatic. If you build your level properly, the character knows when you hit this point, it can go up because it's not you, it's the AI, right? Well, now imagine artificial intelligence starts playing an active role in every element of your game. What might that mean? Well, if Blizzard Entertainment's listening, they need to think about this because they need a new trick up their bag to save their dying virtue signaling company, right? Which rapes all their employees to the point of suicide at one point, unfortunately. A little dark history there. Imagine World of Warcraft comes out. It's a new version of World of Warcraft. Now, what's the problem with World of Warcraft? What is the game in general, in case you haven't played it, okay? It's like a really cool sort of Dungeons & Dragons type world, but very funny. So the artwork is generated in a very comical, almost cartoon fashion. And all these writers, when I went and visited them with Sid Ead, it was, and I only mentioned his name because that's how I got in the door. I knew a bunch of guys who worked there, but it was like I was going to be like just running around the office listening to people. I got that with him. They had like four people in the lore team. These are geniuses that know everything about everything that was ever that's ever been conceived of from, I think, 1993 up. So every single dude they've ever invented, doodad, I mean, every piece of history, what their clothing looks like, what spells they have, what language they use, what language they don't use, who's related to who, what, you know, all that stuff, right? But what ends up having to happen is that you have maybe, I'm going to guess, 10,000 quests per expansion. That might be a little high. Don't know. Can't remember. Feels like it's a billion quests. But they have to be written by human beings. And you walk up to a quest giver, and they greet you, and you say hi. It's not a human, and it's not a real person in the real game, or in the game. It's an NPC, right? So you go up to like an Anderson Cooper guy, right? Anyway, you ask them, and they have some missions for you. Go get this shit, bring it back to me. There's what we call the FedEx mission. Go get that package, bring it back to me. Then there's the whole hunter-gathering thing. Kill 25 bunny rabbits and bring me their tails. Whatever it is, it's all pre-calculated, and it's in the game. Now, imagine, as one of the little tricks they might pull, is they integrate it with some sort of GPT engine. They license an engine that can run in the game or off the server. And now all of a sudden you walk up and it's different. It's different every time you play the game. Except, just like GPT, when you chat with it, it remembers things that you said before. If you reference it, you can't just come in 5 days later and start necessarily saying the same conversation. But if you go, hey, remember that thing I was having with my Kotlin and the list adapter? You know, it worked, but there was this problem. And oh yeah, I remember that. And it goes into like giving you your code that you gave it 3 or 4 days ago, right? Well, in this scenario, in a video game scenario, imagine it goes, well, with Nancy or Jonathan, I've started them off in this particular direction. The designers have told me what my constraint pool is of what I can give them. They've given me the archetypes of what quests can be created by me that I can give them. Now, the AI spitting out a little bit of text about a quest is just part of the game. What would actually happen is the AI would actually talk with the back end and get a buy-in that, hey, is it okay if I tell them to go kill that thing over there? It's on the kill list of things I can kill in my quests. And you get me like 5-6 different body parts I can get off them. Plus, there's the random drop thing, and I got this whole list of random drops that might fall off of them. Maybe this zebra has got like a crystal in its cheek, but it's only like one every 10 ones, you know, where it grows in the cheek. I need those crystals out of there, man. So you have to kill 100 of these fucking things to get 10, right? Imagine that. The whole thing's AI. Now, all of a sudden, put a lot more people out of business. But instead of being a writer, you might go off and be a CG artist, or you write all those archetypes. You become sort of a technical writer. You're writing quests that plug into an engine. So you have a big tool on your end as a Blizzard employee, let's just say, and you're stitching possibilities together. Well, these could be associated with these, not individually, but to say this pool of things could be associated with this pool of things at this point in the game, in this region, handed out by these quest givers. And the whole thing just randomizes. For those of you who like simulation battle games, you like historical simulation battle games, well, currently right now, they definitely have enough AI in them that the battle can go different, especially if you do the wrong thing or extra right thing. But now imagine every element of history is put into the AI. It's using big machine learning as a sledgehammer to fight you. But AI is the thing that is actually determining what's possible in this scenario. Imagine you're right in the middle of a World War II game, and then notice comes over the radio, Hitler's been killed. And Hermann Göring, who always wanted to be the dude, the chancellor, he comes in and takes over the game. And all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, I'm not even fighting Hitler anymore. And the Japanese signed a deal with the Russians. You know what I mean? It's like, shit could change. It would be really amazing to see all that stuff integrate. And I think you will, as soon as the intellect and the balls of game companies evolves, it'll take a couple smart people like myself to get in there and sell the pitch and get them to do it. And then there's the hurdle of actually how you want to do it, because you could skin a cat a million different ways, right? Cutscenes in video games. Well, let's just take what we just learned, right? Because we haven't even talked about the ultra-realistic experiences that are coming with this technology as well. I'm setting the foundation of what could take place. Cutscenes are always the same, right? Because they have narratives. They have to get certain facts out the door, get from point A to point B in your script line, right? Well, you have to introduce this bad character over here. You have to tell him the Dr. Evil story about, you know, how you have shroon balls, and then you got to run off and do whatever you got to do. As soon as it ends, you're injected into the next storyline where you can play the game again. Well, imagine you don't go so rigid with your game design, and there are definitely A to B points that are occurring, but the dialogue is being written differently virtually every time you play the game. And because you have AI voices now, okay, you hire the voice actor to come in and read the range of voice imprints that will give them that. And now they can say anything in that voice. They can even speak your character's name properly. What if they said to you, okay, you just spelled some gobbledygook crap for your character name. Now, you're going to, at this early stage of the character design phase of the game, you're going to speak your character name into the computer. It will study your phonetics of your syllables and your emphasis, right? And it starts teaching the AI to say it back. And it says, you know, push the space bar when we're saying your character name correctly. And so instead of having all that dry, transcribed dialogue on the bottom of your screen, it's saying it, man. And it's saying your name properly. I mean, just basic stuff, which would take a game and blow it out to the next generation, right? World of Warcraft has a famous city on the Horde side. There's two factions, the Alliance, which is all humanoid, typically played by little kids and their soccer moms, because they just don't want to be anything but human. And they have the Horde side, where you get all the teenagers and the older guys are like, yeah, man, I want to be an orc. But imagine walking into Orgrimmar today. Orgrimmar today, I'll show a picture of it. It's very cartoony. It gets more detailed over the years, but it's almost a legendary place. Like, you don't redesign downtown Disney. You could, but you don't do it because it's legendary. You don't rebuild the Eiffel Tower because you could make it more complicated. You want to see it the way you've seen it in postcards since the World Fair, right? But now imagine Unreal Type Engine and Diablo 4, man. I'm telling you, that game is one of the most beautiful games of its kind ever. I mean, it's generally photoreal, to be honest, right? Other than the characters are a little, you know, fantasy oriented, right? The artists get an A+ on that game. The voiceover manager coach gets an F- because all the actors are talking like this, trying to get as much drunk. I need a glass of water. And I mean, it's just horrid. It's like Shatner on Quaaludes, man. It's every piece of dialogue in that entire fucking game is so slow. It's painful. You want to sit and wait for the story the first time you play it through, but I found I can't even, I don't have any patience for it. It's like 10-minute cutscenes could be 2.5 minutes if they just speak in a normal tempo. But you're walking into Orgrimmar in a new generation. Orgrimmar is the central city of the OG version of WoW. When it first came out in 2004 or 5, right? I only got into my Mac on the December 05. But now it is gritty. It's rainy that particular day. It looks like any dim-lit medieval movie you've ever seen on that particular day. It could be sunny the next day. But you're a newcomer walking into this town. You're not level one. You have to fight your way over to that place. And you're, I don't know what level you are, 15 or 20 or something like that. But imagine walking in and you got some dudes who've been playing this game for 15 years. Even NPCs, right? And the rain is splashing down the side of the building. Because it can now. It totally can without a problem. And as you walk in, you see the NPCs, you know, and their armor all fucked up and their scars on their faces and shit. You know, and they just look at you really weird, just like, you know, who's this guy, you know? Maybe even say a derogatory comment. You know, there's so many woke fucking people playing that game. You hurt my feelings. But imagine that. Shit starts getting real. And if you use the technology properly, there's just a setup for making that all happen. Voices. Imagine two AIs talking to each other when you go into a tavern. It basically just says, hey, AI, GPT, or whatever engine you're going to lease. These are two elves that are 150 to 130 years old apiece, which means they're about teenager level, right? Or maybe in their early 20s and a human. And they're just talking about their, you know, some mission they were on. There's some backstory that it reads and it goes, okay, I got it. Now I'm just going to make up dialogue. And you walk in and this shit just happened, man. It's like walking in New York City in a video game in the 30s. And you start hearing about this guy in Germany is causing problems, right? We haven't even seen the basics of what can happen and what will happen in the next 20 years if, one, we survive, and two, they punch it up another level. Now, the other half of the experience itself. What I've been talking about is subject matter. Most of you probably envisioned, if you were listening, and it was interesting, you imagine seeing that on your television or your big-ass computer monitor. You know you didn't see this on your phone, and you probably didn't see it on your iPad. iPads are several orders of magnitude too slow to run any of this shit, okay? Now, let's just imagine that the Meta Oculus gets way better, the Vive gets way better, that this Apple Vision Pro may not have the solutions on it, but it's going to drive the technology just like the iPhone. Remember when that iPhone came out, man? There were a lot of apps on it, but I mean, it didn't have much. And then instantaneously, the competition came in and murdered it, right? Still does really, really well. I mean, you see them, 50% of the phones I see are Apple iPhones, right? Okay. Now, all that stuff I just told you, you got a headset on while it's happening. Doesn't matter if it's a pair of sunglasses like the one I'm wearing or some big giant contraption on your head, like the Vision Pro. The Vision Pro has been sold to you as a complete computer. That's why it's $3,500. It's not drawing a signal from somewhere else and playing it on your screen as a primary source of its experience. It will be able to probably patch in your television and other stuff, but it'll just be like a video playing like your web browser showing you the news, right? But now all that experience, all that amazing audio in full 360, walking to that tavern, in your favorite video game, all that AI chat, all that AI behavior, someone calling out your name across the room, shouting it over a crowd, which you just dialed in this crazy character name. Frizzle Frazzle, come over here. You know, it's like, whoa. And it's in your head in full 3D sound. There's always been 3D sound since the 90s, okay? Like 93, the first patent showed up, but I was privy to from an ex-NASA employee who actually developed 3D sound. You could just listen to two speakers. In fact, you put your headset, but you could listen to two speakers on your desk. And man, this whole thing was around you. It's not a big deal today, right? Imagine that just right on your earlobes, right? That's with the current systems that talk to your brain, all using the inputs of your eyes and your ears to create this experience. Now, we're missing a few senses, even if we just go with the limited five senses, right? Okay. Well, they have been developing technology for decades that is trying to talk to a lot more of your body. They're trying to talk to your body like the movie Brainstorm with Christopher Walken and Natalie Wood. If you haven't seen that movie, I won't recap it, but you need to go see that movie. And you need to go see it because it's your future. Near future, okay? This machine could record every sense in your body, including your heart rate. Everything. If someone recorded themselves having an orgasm and you played it back, you would, as I said on Saturday Night Live, jizz in your pants, okay? It would happen. So what they have done is they have a couple different tracks of development that are way further down than you think they are, even in the private sector, if you do your right research, okay? They have big machine learning that has been taught the patterns of your muscle tissue reflexes when you have certain thoughts. Now, you know from Apache helicopters, this was, probably 35, 40-year-old technology at this point. However, they didn't have big machine learning back then, at least that we knew about, right? Imagine that you wanted to type the letter A on the keyboard. They have tracked and probably thousands of experiments with probably weird contraptions on human beings, every single muscle reflex from your brain down to your hands to type the letter A. Now, then they put that in big machine learning. When you even think about typing the letter A, you're subconsciously firing a bunch of muscles off to your fingertips before you actually lift your hands and begin to approach the letter A on the keyboard and push it down. Because they know that this pattern is unique for A versus Z versus T, etc., it'll go ahead and push the A on the keyboard for you. And this is without any type of device being inserted underneath the skin. This is just putting a few sensors in a few places on your body. Okay, so you've seen some of those devices. They look like big erector sets all over the human body. And it's just like, it's weird and, you know, seems slow sometimes in some of the shitty demos you see. It ain't like that in real life. Imagine they have a really good designer design some wicked ass clothes. Very, very optimized, but really cool patterns and stuff. And where they need to really touch your body, it's got a cool pattern. And you just put a shirt on. Maybe at the most, a little cap on your head. Like Arthur C. Clarke talked about in 3001 A Space Odyssey. He imagined someone having to shave your head and then putting it on your skull cap, but that is not necessary. They'll be able to figure out what your body is desiring before you even get there. And those are mechanical functions that you would assume them to be interested in. Now, just like it was a Tom Cruise Minority Report, they're going to get into all of your subconscious thoughts, whether you're thinking violent or whether you're thinking happy. And imagine an average grown man understands that you manage a lot of thoughts without even moving a muscle on the outside. I mean, that anyone can see. Some guy walks in the room, he's a little bit weird. You go into that defense mode, and then, he's a good guy. I heard him talk, and he's got a little wimpy voice. He's a nice guy. No threat. That's where they're going to be able to get to you and figure out. I was working in LED technologies for a long time, worked with some Google guys. One dude had a PhD in this kind of stuff, and he was looking, they can hit your body with LEDs, lighting up your subdermal tissue, and take readings on how you're feeling, whether you feel angry, nervous, whatever. So you go through that little TSA checkpoint and look just exactly like Arnold Schwarzenegger walking through the airport check-in in the movie Total Recall. They'll be able to know everything about you just walking in the door, whether you're nervous or whatever. you can expect a lot of drugs to be involved with subduing killers, you know, but they'll also be able to see if you got anything in your pocket. There'll be no mystery to the human factor when this is all over. But you put that on, and minus giving you a heart attack, they want you to have your own genuine emotions because that's the reward of the experience. But imagine every single other thing that you could feel is being dictated into your brain at your brain level. You don't have to have a haptic suit on to feel touch. Now, for the short term, they could give you a glove like they made in the 90s, where it's actually, I can rub my hands together in Austin, Texas, and if you're in Paris, you can feel me rubbing my hands together in Paris. That's sort of the crude version. But they've mapped enough of this body mechanism that we're involved in. They know where to, like, push a little bit of electricity in your head, and you're going to feel it in your hand, feel it in your foot. Some dude bumps you from behind in that Orgrimmar city, and you're like, whoa, it's like some dude behind you. He's an AI guy talking an AI voice, talking in your character's name. Or it could be another human being. Just saying. You haven't seen anything yet, okay? Now, just to recap the video game engines for a second. Some of you might know of Quixel. Quixel is Quixel. It's an Australian-based company that created a technique that basically gives you absolute power over your environments that are rendered in 3D in a video game. Meaning this, every single grain of sand could be there and individually there. You won't see it until you get close. Every blade of grass is there. And not just like the patches of grass that are just laid in by the old-fashioned technique. Every blade of grass could have its own decay on its texture. Like it's dying in a different way or growing in a different way. Everything is unique. Everything. The John Carmack did really one of the first incarnations for his game, I think, Rage. For those of you who watched my quantum computer episode, if you don't know what one of those are, and you don't want to admit it, don't worry about it. Just go to deepthoughtsradio.com and look up quantum, and then watch the show. I explain it all so that you can understand it, regardless of your scientific background or not. We are talking about microcomputers, personal computers. I should say personal computers, not microcomputers. Personal computers with GPUs and great CPUs and multiple cores. They're going to be working with back-end servers to get particular content generated. Anytime you have a giant heavy lifting situation, you might farm it out to a back-end computer. You do use back-end computers with games because we don't want people to cheat. So we keep all the logic on the back end and all the results on the back end. So if you try to get inside memory and give yourself a high score, it doesn't exist on the back end. Therefore, when that number gets sent to the back, they know you're cheating and they knock out your account and lock you down. Don't do that. A lot of games are created shitty, though. All the information's in your cell phone. And so they hack the cell phone. They get this outrageous high score. It's impossible at the game, right? But with quantum computing, and we're still a little ways away, they're made of something called qubits. And I won't get into the major details because it's in the episode, but they're basically spinning atoms and using those the position of the atom to generate numbers to put into calculations such that they have instantaneous understanding of things as opposed to linearly trying to figure out where you are in the maze. It looks at the maze and goes, boom, there's the way in, there's the way out. Instantaneously. They still make a case that there are reasons to have linear code or linear processing, which will still beat quantum processing, but I think that's just a short-term patch of a theory that will go away once these things are stabilized. They have about a 5% error rating right now. 5% may not sound like that's much, but you wouldn't want to go through a transporter in Star Trek and have 5% of your body fucked up when you get to the other side. So that's how incredibly error prone that is. It's bad. Okay. Oh, your eyes, whatever. Only 5% of your body. No, it's real important. But when they do get it stabilized, they're probably going to use a mixture of better hardware to stabilize those atoms and drag the values off the atoms. But they'll probably use big machine learning, just like we use with error packet correction, with network traffic, to calculate, you know what, you were really consistent streaming that data to me. And then all of a sudden, you went off base, and the big machine learning will have used trillions and quadrillions of examples to go, I think you meant this number, and it'll be right virtually all the time. It's like people that believe in reptilian theory because the compression in a video got bad for a second, right? They didn't have error correction in streaming video. So when you had a bad modem connection back in the day and you looked at Nicki Minaj's eyes and they go from circular to slits and then back to circular, it's because the compression algorithm screwed up. Not because she's a fucking lizard, okay? She might have other problems, but that's probably not one of them, right? But now imagine the way that we store these video games is different. What happens now when you download a video game? You download this gigantic 40 gig kernel, which has all the bits and pieces, all the sounds, all the cutscenes, all the world assets, all your character assets. And that's one way they keep the networking traffic down to almost nothing. As you're running through the forest, it's just XYZ, usually yaw pitch roll. And then what you might be firing or what you have on your body. And it's just broadcasting that setup to everybody else. And it's just the very tiny bits of difference. And so your network traffic in like World of Warcraft is virtually nothing. You send an email, you have sent a million times more bits than an average 1 minute play in World of Warcraft, even during a raid, okay? But now imagine you take the quantum system and you start saying, okay, what are quantum computers really good at? Conceiving of universes, conceiving of big giant sets of data, and then calculating operations against them. All right. But what do we say about sort of prehistoric calculations in games, right? They had created software, which was talking one language, and hardware, which was programmed to, or created it to take data in a completely separate way. And the more that these two things were different, there had to be this buffer layer in between that translated it and then translated it back. So eventually they got smart, right? They wrote software that was designed to talk the chip talk, and the chips were redesigned to talk the software talk. And that's where you get a GPU. Now, we're not there yet, but imagine you have these giant quantum computers on the back end. I don't even think they're that big, to be honest, physically. But they're super powerful. And they're doing amazing number crunching in the back end to conceive of giant data sets. And only thing that happens with your client side is that they've created a compatible API that basically says this thing is going to be generating like a universe. But it's going to crunch it down so it can get over the web and work with the assets I've got on this side. But this side also now has AI and big machine learning actually participating in game creation as opposed to just being a little bit of, where's my enemy now? A-star algorithm stuff, right? Which is the chase algorithm where it tries to find out where you are, right? And litter it with mistakes so that it's easier if you don't want to get your ass handed to you, right? Well, once those two worlds are married, the type of games that can be created would be sort of like that episode in Black Mirror, season 4, where the kid had a whole universe where he's taking his employees into the system and keeping them hostage in some faux Star Trek environment. If you haven't seen that episode, he basically had a galaxy inside his computer in his house. I mean, a galaxy, a universe, really, but we didn't see much more than a few planets. But he technically could go anywhere he wanted to go. One of the greatest episodes they ever made, to be honest. So we don't have that. We have a limited world. Every time we load a video game, especially Fallout, the series, you can always feel it. Now, they're pushing that engine to the very maximum. And Fallout 4 was an epic milestone in video game creation. But imagine there's no more limitations. We've had space games like EVE Online. I worked on Earth and Beyond, which a lot of coders went over to create EVE, as I understand at one point. They're kind of boring. And it's really boring because how the hell can you create a universe in a video game? You really can't. And flying is fucking boring as it can be, man. Just, oh, here comes the stars. And it's EVE Online. You're just flying forever. If you played 30 hours of EVE Online, you're spending 29 and a half hours looking at stars going by. It's an exaggeration, but I mean, it's got a lot of good work in it. It just needs more power to create a better world. Here's the interesting delta we're dealing with. If I asked you, do you think the world's getting smarter? I already know what you're going to say. You'll say the same answer I'm going to say. Now, I'm hoping that I'm wrong. I'm hoping that a lot of these kids that are playing instruments now and getting out of the tech world and kind of going to a renaissance phase of, hey, man, I think I want to paint. You know, I think I want to draw. Yeah, I know the computer can think it all up, but that's not fun. I want to show my mom, my dad, my friends, whatever, a song I wrote. It didn't write it. I wrote it. And when I write it badass, that's my credit I get, right? I mean, it's a benefit of being a creator like your God, right? For the average Joe, I do not think that they can conceive of what we're talking about. And I don't say that to puff us up at all. I think it's going to be the answer to the question of, well, how could anyone ever control society absolute? How could that even happen? Isn't man a creature that loves freedom? We've also heard that, you know, they complain about slavery, right? Apparently only Americans ever had slaves. No one else ever had slaves, right? A friend of mine said, but we're all slaves, aren't we? And it's, you've heard it before. You're like, yeah. We're all slaves. We're all slaves. We're slaves even if we didn't have anyone over our head. We have to pick up our older bodies and move around. We have to do something, right? Become relevant. It takes a little while. All the tricks you learned in this world 10 years ago are obsolete 10 years later. The way they do it is they get a segment of the growing population, the young kids. They can't do it in America. They'll do it in China. They can't do it in China. They'll do it in India, etc., etc. They get a whole gaggle of people, and they sell them that this constrained artificial reality, using just the techniques we've talked about with video games, they teach them that that's freedom. This is more freedom than your parents had. That's one of the biggest jokes on young kids. Look, if you take an average couple from 1955 in any decent first world country, I can't speak for third world, never been to one, and you sell them the bullshit they sold them in the 60s and 70s, you know what it was? They said, you know what's freedom? Dying alone, unloved, being divorced, having your kids fucking hate you. That's freedom. But how do they sell it? Oh, it's 9-to-5 movies where you're, you know, hear me roar. It's, hey, credit cards are free money, right? This oversexing your life and all this other crap that's always construed as freedom, and it will be embedded. America suffers from, and I've said this several times on the show, America basically takes most of the bad habits of the world, invented in large cities by psychopaths or elite, you know, transvestites that have, the queens were kings and the kings were queens, right? They want to take all of their weirdness and they make it the norm and they push it into a city with drug substrates, right? Cocaine, heroin, whatever. And then the kids from the rural district goes, man, I'm missing out. I'm having a good education and my parents are still married. I live in a 6-mile township. All the money stays in the town because we don't have any giant corporations in here. So everybody has a decent life. Everyone has a house, a garage, 2 cars in it. Cars are all paid for, houses paid for. I want to go to the city and get into debt and live in an apartment for a few years until you can't afford it. And then I'm going to be so blind that when they move the age, retirement age up, like they do in France over and over and over again, you're dying alone, broke. So this technology is a vehicle. If you've already seen the unrecord video, then you're ready for what I'm about to say. If you haven't seen the unrecord video, at least go see it after this episode, because it is a guy killing the living shit out of people in a warehouse. You have no idea what the story is. You know, it's against a cop, but he's killing good guys and bad guys. It's always bad guys though, right? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a good guy in that game with the first person view. You are killing people. And it's so fucking real that you can't tell the difference. So what's that going to do? What do I always say on this show? You're good at what you do. You're good at what you do. So be fucking careful what you do. Don't bullshit yourself with anything. If you believe in spirits, make sure you got some evidence. You know, if you believe in saviors like the 17 dude coming in and saving the fucking world, be careful. Because he may not exist. If he doesn't exist, they're going to walk all over you because you've been sitting on your sofa waiting for someone else to do your job. Even if you believe in God, you know he doesn't come down and do your homework for you. He might enlighten you. He doesn't do it for you. You got to do it for yourself. Okay. These mechanisms are designed to make us, as I always say, the third act in WALL-E, right? You're lazy and you get used to being lazy. Your bones don't even connect inside your body because you're so atrophied, right? But these kids will be playing these games, turning into murderers. So school shootings, it's not even at a level yet that's going to match what it'll be in 30 years if the shit just keeps coming out. I'm going to tell a story again that I've told before because we're right on point. I was at the Game Developers Conference, GDC, in San Jose. I think it's around 2003, 4, 5, somewhere in there. Actually, no, it would have been 5, 6, or 7 because my company paid for it that time. I go every year back in those days. It's where we go to find deals to make video games. Companies that want to make games don't have the resources, or companies that want to get into the game industry and you sign deals. I've honestly made more money at E3, but that's another conversation. But I sit down to eat breakfast. And across from me is this woman in this sort of beige, ancient business suit. She is a little overweight, very quiet. And I don't want to sit at a table not talking to somebody. So I say, hey, how you doing? And she speaks to me in a British accent. I was like, oh, okay. And she's kind of nerdy. So you think, oh, maybe she's some badass game player. Who knows, right? She's not dressed for the occasion. I figure she's a part of some company, right? And I said, so I'm started talking to her. And I said, well, why are you here? Quote, I'm here to figure out how to make kids lust for war by playing video games. End quote. Imagine that. And here I am. I'm awake at this point. I don't know half as much as I know now, but I'm awake. So I'm looking at this lady. And I was already involved with another project out of San Jose where they were hosting war games and some dude in the military got caught getting kickbacks and he got court-martialed. So I've seen how the military gets embedded in this kind of stuff. Not a huge surprise, right? They wanted this, at the time, they wanted a 100-year war until Trump killed it, right? So she says to me, continuing to talk, I'm from the British equivalent of Area 51. I'm like, what? And she's dry as a bone, okay, man. So it's not like she's bragging or anything. She said, yeah. She goes, you know, she said, Tony Blair has to get permission from us to enter our base. I'm like, whoa, okay. For Americans that don't know who that is, that's like the president of their country, the prime minister, okay? So it'd be like saying Joe Biden has to get permission to go in Area 51. Same thing. And so she says to me then, because we had this really detailed conversation, as I always do with people, she says, I'd love to send you this questionnaire because it will just help me in my research. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to help this woman murder children, right? But I said, okay, because I want to see this questionnaire, right? So I get back, it's over, I'm back here in Costa Mesa, my office at the time, and she sends me this, I think, without exaggeration, it was 167 questions spread out over 75 pages or something like that. They're essay questions, right? I know somewhere in my archives I've got this PDF and I just got to find it, but they probably fucking erased it. I mean, I'm not even joking. They probably got it on my computer and erased it. And I have no other claim like that in my entire life. I don't believe people are sneaking around my system like that. So what I ended up doing is Daniel Estulin had come out with the Bilderberg book. And I think I said to her in person that I was going to give her the reference for the book so she could check it out. And because I'm like, well, you know, this, I didn't tell her at any point in time that I thought that what she was doing was wrong because I didn't want to kill the bait, right? I wanted to keep talking to me. But I don't remember exactly the string of conversation, but I sent her the Bilderberg book. And I said, look, you can buy it in America at all the bookstores, so it can't be that bad. It really shocks me that book is still in the stores. I just asked her, I think, you know, have you ever heard of this or something like that? But after I sent that email, I think she said something to the effect of, thanks, I'll check that out, in like a single sentence response. And then I never replied to her questionnaire, and she never asked for it. It was over. So that's just a little glimpse of who plays games inside the gaming industry. Now, if you're familiar with all the satanic crap in the world right now and all of the Sound of Freedom kind of stuff going on, you look at Blizzard, the company, who's had this franchise, Diablo, for a very long time. And when you look at the game today, it is, again, it is theatrically and artistically the highest that that type of game gets in terms of artistic quality. But I have, when I launched this game, because I'm studying the game for other reasons, it's hard to enjoy the game, to be honest. Forget what the subject matter is at all. It's just the mechanics are a little bit exhausting. I'm kind of past that moment in my life. But I see all this blood, satanic shit on my computer. Like, I double-click this thing or click the play button, and this big fucking pentagram comes up on my computer. And don't worry, I got God right next to me while I'm playing. He's in my mind, and we're doing this together, you know. But I'm looking at all this satan. You're a good guy. You're here there to kill the devil. I mean, it's so I understand the spin on that. But I, as I've told you several times, there's a game that they play, and it's called I Made You Look. And so, you know, there's an old Frazzle Drip video out there. They, you know, if you got a copy of that and you watched it and you got horrified, they would love that. They made you look. I get worried about companies like Blizzard, this is a little side note, that has a holding company that actually owns Activision. They beef up their numbers. They get rid of all their original employees. They literally created this bait and switch thing with the Titan Project internally, where they baited away all of their best cinematic directors, best writers, best video game people into a project that spent, from what I was told by one of my buddies who worked there, almost $1 billion, like $850 million on this game, and it just went nowhere. It turned into other games. Destiny, I think, was one of the side pieces of it. But it tanks, and all those guys leave, and the company's now dead with like 3,500 new employees that don't know what the fuck to do. There's aspects of their games that are getting better, of course. The engines are definitely getting better. But they have to kill it and control it. The guy that created the, if you're familiar with the franchise, there was a Panda expansion, Pandaria. And the last OG game designer came in, and he was at his own BlizzCon, and he was kind of getting beaten up because we hadn't a chance to play the game yet. And he was just getting beaten up because it looked like the Kung Fu Panda. It was actually one of the best expansions out there. And he said, he's sitting in his own interview, like he's an OG dude, founder kind of guy, maybe like the fourth employee or something. But he's like, man, I just wanted to make a game where maybe like killing everything isn't the objective. And he's kind of just looking around like, God damn, these motherfuckers are so stupid. It's just his look on his face. And when he did that, I was like, whoa, there it is right there. This is the last dude to be there besides one sketch guy. And he's trying to make greatness, and he did make greatness, and he was gone within the year. Take it over. Divide and conquer. Boom, boom, boom. So that's sort of the frosting on top. The good game companies that have great franchises will eventually get usurped and taken over and blown out. Remember, Apple Computer is the lesson of how they work. Apple's created in 75. They're kicking ass and taking names. They're handing IBM their ass. IBM's entire dream of having a terminal computer in everyone's house linked to some other computer where they get to see everything that you do, survey, was killed by the Apple II computer. Steve Jobs walks up to the podium and says, fuck IBM, we're going to destroy these assholes. And he was doing it. Well, then he needed money to scale production. He borrows a ton of cash, hundreds of millions of dollars. They walk in and say, I think it was Fidelity Investing, which has a pyramid as its logo. And they bombard him with, one, you're too damn young to have this amount of money and manage it properly. Untrue. They took Steve Wozniak and jacked him up with a bunch of meetings and then took over his hardware design. He had the Apple III ready to go, which was an advanced Apple II. Instead, they shoved this Apple III design from another company they acquired, was just junk. The Lisa comes out, $10,000 computer in 1979 with a $5,000 printer. Right. That's a big seller, right? They eventually force Steve to pick another CEO, which he ends up picking John Sculley. Steve does the proper thing, finds out what the school budgets are for new Macintosh computers, this computer no one's ever seen yet, all the state-of-the-art shit in it, and they said, 1999 is as high as we can go. If you get it 1999, we have an impulse buy purchase order that can come your way. So he prices it at 1999. John Sculley sees that and goes, no, it needs to be $24.99. He goes, John, you can't do $24.99 because the schools can't do that. They'd have to be a special appropriations, and they can't get that through. We're going to be delayed, and we're going to lose out. By the way, IBM just released the PC in 81, and this is 84. John wouldn't budge. Steve threw down to the founders, and they told him to pound sand. Wozniak was already gone because he wasn't going to have his life wasted by these assholes. And Wozniak has been tiptoeing around the truth for fucking years, and it pisses me off. He damn well knows they sabotaged his company. Why did Steve Jobs run a pirate flag up in Cupertino and build the Macintosh off in a separate wing? The pirate flag was a big fuck you to say, look, we're gonna make this thing whether you like it or not. But I got to pull up my own money to make this thing. We're going to make this thing. Just left him alone thinking he'd fail. Before you guys tell me a dumbass story about him stealing everything from Xerox, they gave Xerox $110 million for the GUI. They didn't steal it from Xerox. But he made the fatal mistake, not thinking conspiratorially, and he showed Bill Gates the Macintosh. That was the end of the game. Now, it would have happened anyway because they're spying all over his shit. But here comes Windows a few years later. Obviously, Windows 1 and 2 were shit. I released on 2.1, I think, the tax product. Anyway, they usurp it. It's VHS to beta. Beta is better and smaller. VHS is larger and okay. And so everyone buys what's cheap. They just give the shit away. They're not making the computer. So they fuck him out of his company. Now, he may have tried to play an alphabet agency in the 90s and do it all over again, but he ended up getting caught up having his iPhone stolen by Google and trying to sue them, and he mysteriously gets ill and dies, right? Remember, the name of the game, pardon the pun, is if you influence a giant population of the world, then you're starting to play with their poker game. Once you play with their poker game, they start looking at you like the guy in Ogremar, and they will fuck you up. You can talk about them like I'm doing on this show all you want. Play with their game? You better have one of those 17 guys protecting you. Otherwise, if you're lucky, you'll get talked to. If you're unlucky, you'll just vanish one day or be accidented, right? Anyway, I thought this would be a fun episode. I spent the day really ingesting this material, and it dovetails with hundreds of conversations I've had about this with friends and family. I'm sure you've had these conversations. I just wanted to add a lot of data to your data set so that when you talk about it, you can be really intelligent with people and you can start conceiving of this stuff and see if you can make more connections. We could go for hours about what could possibly take place with this technology. Just understand, this is horse and buggy today, and what we're talking about is really like anti-gravity cars in about 10 years in terms of the delta between where we are today and what games are going to look like 10, 20, 30 years from now. There'll be complete paradigms of existence. Remember the second Black Mirror ever made? It was about a kid pedaling a bike to create credits for himself because he went to bed in a cubicle that was surrounded by LED screens that were chattering at him constantly, ads playing constantly. If he wanted to have a moment's silence, he had to spend a credit that he had pedaled all day for to get it to shut the fuck up for a little while, right? When I say these experiences are going to become your reality, it could be as simple as that. Not even a headset. Just it's all around you constantly, just pounding you and pounding you. Just be occupied, be occupied. Meanwhile, you're pedaling a bike that keeps Lord Rothschild's AccuJack running, right? If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. Website's pretty clean. Do know that there's a list of YouTube videos that have been, well, videos that have been pulled off YouTube, deleted, and you can watch them there off of Rumble or BitChute. I either find people like Rumble or hate Rumble, and if they hate Rumble, they love BitChute, or vice versa. So you're covered. If you're a YouTube fan and you think you're subscribed, make sure you are subscribed. They are fucking with our numbers like crazy right now because we had a huge surge in video watching of all the other videos in the back in the past. And I just keep getting like 10 and they knock down 5, but they're just not like every 6 hours or 12 hours, you're knocking somebody off and someone resubscribes. And just make sure you're subscribed. And again, if you have 100,000 accounts out there, get them all subscribed. Because we really want to blow the... It's not for my ego whatsoever. I make no money from it anymore, right? They turn me on and then turn me off for monetization. Whatever. I'm good. If you want to get the audio of all these episodes the second that the master's cut, go on to Patreon. Donate $1 a month or more if you like. And you will get into the system where you get the audio drop. Plus, there's a whole bunch of stuff up there. My last radio show, tons of episodes of that up there. I still have another... Jeez, probably 80 to upload. But I put a lot of the fun stuff up there right away. Some hilarious interactions between Kyle and I. And you'll find out how long I've been talking about this stuff. This is like 2014, 2015 episodes for stuff that people didn't know until the 17 thing happened, right? But you'll notice my message is consistent over time. I personally don't know of any prediction I've ever subscribed to, meaning I learned it from somebody else, obviously, but there's a lot of things I've uncovered myself that hasn't just either stayed true or become true. You know, either we're living in it right now or it's already passed. I talked about depopulation a long time ago. I knew they were going to do something to knock us out, and boom, here comes 2020, right? We didn't know how they were going to do it. But anyway, thank you for watching. To the PayPal and Patreon people, thank you so much and make it happen. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.